Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher, Weekend Chefs in the City. Today we're talking about bread and how to make it. Joining me are my two co-hosts, Rich Tarapac Sr. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ann.
And Steve Stover, welcome back.
Good morning, Ann.
Rich and Steve are celebrating 35 years of teaching cooking together. Check out the excellent May 18th Columbus Dispatch article about their history together and in the kitchen. We'll have a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Also, check out the link to the Chefs in the City blog. Steve submitted his 100th review in May. Bravo. That's at WOSU.org/chefsinthecity. And without further ado, we welcome back to the show author, teacher, and baker Sarah Black. She's director of the New Flowers and Bread on High Street in Clintonville. Her 2016 book is entitled One Dough, Ten Breads, Making Great Bread by Hand. Welcome back.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
You moved here all the way from New York City.
I did.
I thought we could do a little bit thumbnail of what brought you here, what attracted you to this project in Clintonville.
I had lived in New York for over 30 years. It had changed dramatically in the last five. That community of bakers and chefs that I grew up with had kind of dissipated. It became very corporate, and I was looking for a more intimate way to kind of tie up my baking career. And I met Tricia Wheeler and Sarah LaGuatoria, who are the visionaries of Flowers and Bread, and became intrigued with their educational goals. And so I'm so looking forward to kind of expanding my teaching and doing a lot more bread classes coming up this summer.
And Tricia Wheeler, you know her from Edible Columbus and, of course, the Seasoned Farmhouse, also in Clintonville, just down the street from Flowers and Bread.
Right.
Beautiful location. Rich, you've been there.
Yeah, gorgeous location. Tricia and her architect friend do a great job. They've taken existing properties and rehabbed them in a sense, but redesigned them as well. It's really well done. I didn't get upstairs this week to see if the balcony is open yet. They have
It is, I think.
I haven't seen it in the last week, so they move very quickly, and it just might well be open
by now.
So
it's outdoor dining time, even if you're only eating a croissant.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Patio out front.
And both places have such a lovely feel. I mean, they do feel like I feel like a sense of community. I mean, it reminds me in a funny way of Clintonville itself. And I think both places have their individual character, but they also reflect the community that they're in.
You're focusing on teaching now, and I want to talk about that definitely. But tell us about what your vision was for the bakery and the little cafe that's there.
We began with a simple vision, doing maybe five breads to kind of help train all of the new hands that came on board, and worked very methodically and slowly to kind of build skills. We make the bakers there now are making a great olive bread. I heard all about that when I
just
walked
bought a little
in.
Loaf yesterday.
Yeah,
it's great.
Focaccia, fasels, all sorts of dedicated breads on dedicated days.
Oh, okay. So you need to check the menu, and it changes every day.
Tuesday special kind of thing.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What's the Flowers and Bread connection?
That is a very special and unique connection between Tricia and Sarah. I believe that they both had an epiphany when making homemade butter, thinking they wanted good bread, and then they both realized that they loved flowers and the beautiful flowers that are stationed around Ohio, and they came together with that thought and that feeling, and it blossomed.
Yeah.
As it were. Yeah.
So you've seen where they do the flower class,
yep.
Flower arranging classes as well.
Yes, it's about a third of the space, but it's well done. And I've seen all of the supplies. I haven't seen any. In fact, I was encouraging my wife, Roberta, to go up there. She likes to arrange flowers to take some lessons. But it's a big space and probably can accommodate a bunch of students.
Yeah. You know, speaking of flowers, I mean, Steve Stover and Rich Tarapac and Sarah Black, I was just reading a book last night, and they were describing a table setting and the food, of course. But flowers were a big part of that. That's what it made me think of.
Mr. Decor.
Mr. Decor. Oh, you like a beautiful table.
He's the decor
guy.
Do.
Okay. We do. And it does work. When young Rich was our older son was in a transition mode at age 13 with long hair, et cetera. And he'd grunt at you when he came down to dinner. One night we had flowers, but we didn't have candles. And he noticed. He said, "Where are the candles?"
You have candles every night?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay, I'm...
That's Roberta's touch.
Humbled by this.
But, and fresh flowers all year long, you got to have them. And now that they're so available and all over the place, including Trader Joe's and Giant Eagle and Fresh Market.
And inexpensive.
Yeah.
You can always find something for $5.
Yeah, getting somebody a dozen roses, no big deal anymore.
Well,
it's $9.99.
I'll go to the sale bin. You know, I mean, they're going to last a few days, right? Mm-hmm. So that's always good.
Yeah.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is our Weekend Chefs in the City show. We're talking about bread today, and we'd love to hear from you. Where do you like to eat bread in Columbus, in Central Ohio? What's your favorite bakery, or what's the restaurant that serves the best bread? We're going to be talking about that coming up a little later. So give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Our special guest today is Sarah Black. She's a teacher, baker, and bread director at Flowers and Bread, and the author of the book One Dough, 10 Breads, Making Great Bread by Hand. And you just heard her talk about her experiences in New York City for many years. She was very well regarded there. And we're lucky enough to have her living in Central Ohio now. So if you have a question about bread making, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Now, you teach classes exclusively now.
Yes. And in fact, our new roster of classes is going to come up next week, June 9th.
Okay.
So be aware, because they sell out very quickly.
That's what I've heard.
How large are the classes?
I'm hoping to keep them at around 10, and that seems to fit beautifully into our baking space. Yeah. And I also want to say that the bakery, the baking studio at Flowers and Bread, is probably the prettiest bakery I've ever been in.
I was going to ask you about that.
Such a welcoming environment, great big picture windows, natural light. It just creates the right atmosphere for teaching and learning.
I saw maximum occupancy was 16, so I figured the classes were going to be nice and small in a good way.
And they're all hands-on, I assume.
They're all hands-on. It's my method of teaching. I like to get students right into the action.
So they're not just watching you. They have their own blob of dough there.
They're shaping and baking.
Shaping and baking.
Well, the first chapter of the book is about touching the bread.
Exactly right. And so I try to model my classes on that.
Yeah. The foreword of the book, I was rereading it, and you talk about, I think, your nieces and nephews and how you introduced them to bread making. And
yes.
It kind of gave you a new insight into the touch and feel of the whole thing.
Well, exactly right. My nieces were very young at the time, McKenna and Celia and my nephew Owen. And I was about to explain bread making and the steps, and bam, they had their hands into the bowl and flour dust was floating everywhere. And I thought, well, this is good. This is how people learn.
Uh-huh. They weren't intimidated, but a lot of people are.
Adults.
And I'm waving my hand in the air.
Adults usually are, but I think by getting their hands in the dough immediately, you just jump past that fear.
It's funny with bread. Like if you start with the simplest, your first basic, your foundation recipe, it's not like it's super expensive ingredients.
No.
It's about 5 cents if you,
exactly.
you cost it out.
But it's intimidating. Rich, do you like to bake bread?
I do. I don't do enough of it, but I do. And I it's great to have freshly made bread for a dinner party. Steve does a lot of that. And it's just fun to do. And I loved your tips about how many times to knead. I think I may over-knead. And if I can cut that back to 12 folds or whatever, 13.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. That's probably the most enlightening part of any of my classes, because we don't really knead the dough. We fold it, which helps protect the interior structure. You just get a lovelier cell structure if you don't overwork your dough.
Right.
Yeah.
And
well,
that was important, too.
I got into bread in law school as sort of a stress reliever. We lived in St. Louis at the time. They had wonderful breads on the hill in the Italian section of town. And we didn't have them in Columbus at the time in particular. And so that's how I got started. And I did have numerous failures. But I think for lawyers, kneading bread and working with dough is a really good thing for stress relief and for that tactile sense. And it's so different than sitting in front of a book or a computer and things like that. So I think lawyers are often...
Yeah, I think we're both lawyers, and they and a lot of our friends who are lawyers are cooks. In fact, a lot of the restaurant critics in town, John Christensen,
right.
John Marshall,
right.
The whole gang are all lawyers. And part of it is when you spend a lot of time with a brief or a document or whatever, and you show it to the client, they don't go, "Ooh, wow!" But when you cook a good meal or make some nice bread, there's an immediate reward.
You need some positive feedback.
That's exactly right.
But it also puts order into your day or into your life. You kind of have to follow steps, and everything else just dissipates from your mind, and it's really a great thing to do.
The story about how you made the transition from paper making to bread making is interesting.
Well, I moved to New York to be an artist, and that dream went out the window as soon as I got to New York. I just didn't have the confidence, but I found a craft that kind of mirrored what I wanted to do, and I learned to make paper at a studio called Dudonné, which is still in business and doing very well, by the way. But it was a very wet craft. You tear sheets and beat them in a Hollander beater with, 90% water to cotton. And so I learned how to work with a very wet substance, and that translated so easily to focaccia and then ciabatta, which became hugely popular back in the 1980s.
That's what you were famous for, right?
That's
you
right.
You probably got it started.
Well,
that's when I first heard of ciabatta.
Yeah. Your book starts with one foundation dough.
That's right.
And that's what's so simple. That's the 5-cent dough.
Well, there are three doughs in progression, baguette, then focaccia, and then ciabatta. And the interesting thing about learning to make these three different doughs is that you're just changing the water quantity by a minute amount, but it changes the entire way you handle the dough and the shapes that you can make and the destination of the dough to become a different bread. So
bread making isn't something you can kind of go, you can't really fudge the amounts. You need to measure. It's chemistry. So if you're shooting for something specific.
Yes and no.
Okay.
I will say that I'm more of a sensual person in terms of working with my senses instead of chemistry or math.
Okay.
And so I feel my way through it, and that's been really helpful for me in becoming a great bread maker.
Because you know now, but in the beginning, did you used to measure?
I always measure, but I check with my hands or my eyes to see and feel if it's right or not. And let's say you have a basic recipe. Every flour bag you get is different in terms of how much water the flour absorbs. Mm-hmm. So you always have to be aware of that.
And the humidity.
Yeah. And the humidity.
Yeah. When I make a processor.
Just the ambient humidity?
I make a processor French bread. And the rough recipe is 3.5 cups of flour and yeast and sugar and 1.5 cups of water. And on a given day, and if you make it in the processor, you put the yeast and part of the water in, and then you pour it until it becomes a soft dough, and it can vary by a quarter of a cup either in terms of the flour and in terms of the temperature and humidity.
Think about how dry a house is in the wintertime
versus
opening the windows.
When you're learning to make it, follow Sarah's explicit recipes. But, as you get to know your dough and your flour and your kitchen, then you can adjust it based on the circumstances. But I think you got to start. The thing I like about her book is that it's just attention to detail, and you can't really fail.
I love
like
that.
I did.
I love that. Don't spoon the flour into the measuring cup because it'll put too much
air
into
it.
So you scoop it out and then level off the top. That was a great tip.
But to that point, you don't want to be in New York City in the middle of August when the humidity is 95% and be making baguettes because they all go like this.
Meaning to sleep. They fall over on their side.
They do.
Okay, it's like a yoga position, but
that's
but it's bread. We're going to continue our conversation about bread today. Start thinking about where you like the bread baskets, because we want to talk about what restaurants have great bread baskets. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you're watching online, you see something delightful in the middle of our table here. You can check that out. Yeah, it looks really, really good. Sarah's going to tell us about that, too. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher, Weekend Chefs in the City on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, along with my co-hosts, Rich Terapek Sr. and Steve Stover. Also joining us today is author, teacher, proprietor of Flowers and Bread in Clintonville, and baker, Sarah Black. Not proprietor, that made you twitch.
No. I'm the baker and teacher.
Baker and teacher. We're talking about bread and baking today. What's your favorite bread served in Central Ohio restaurants? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we're talking about the kind you tell people about when you bring them to a restaurant. Give us a call or email us. Jeff from Columbus called in and said, he says the best baguette can be found at Laughlin's Bakery. And before we went on the air, you were talking about, Sarah, about how baguettes are, I don't know what, how, describe the regard with which you have for, that you have for baguettes.
Well, I think any baker worth her salt or his salt will say that a baguette is kind of your standard bearer, and you show your skills as a baker with how your baguette is made, and it's understanding everything from the flour you choose to how you ferment the dough, the temperatures. You want to get a beautiful interior crumb with big holes. You want to score the baguette properly so it blooms correctly in the oven. You want a dark brown color. So many things going on. And I feel like as long as it takes to open a bakery, it takes as long to really reach your potential in terms of making a baguette.
And as far as that goes, you're saying that you're, in terms of acclimating all of those things that you just mentioned to that workspace.
Well,
is that what you
mean?
I think
that with any bakery, opening is a challenge because everything is brand new. And so I had a 3-month mark for Flowers and Bread, which meant I wanted to keep everything fluid and just kind of each day mark off where we were and what had to change. And for example, our recipe book had basic recipes, but with masking tape over quantities or changes that we were making, because every day we'd make a change. And you have to kind of just keep that in mind and move forward with so much information in your head.
Wow. What's your favorite flour?
I have been using Stutzman Farms whole wheat. It's turkey red.
Mm-hmm.
It's a gorgeous heirloom grain, but it has beautiful baking qualities.
Did you use it in these rolls?
No.
Okay.
I did not.
Okay.
King Arthur is a big favorite in town.
And for every day we use
For every day I use King Arthur, too. Mm-hmm. It's very consistent.
What do I use?
Pillsbury.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But
Doug,
you can use
that.
Yeah, okay, all right. No, I'm just,
I don't want to scare
you
off.
I'm just being real. I'm just being real. Staying real. Doug in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Doug.
Hey, Ann, how are you?
Good.
So in the book Lost Restaurants of Columbus, we're doing a sequel, my co-author Christine Hayes and I.
Doug, who is this?
Doug Motz.
Doug Motz, okay.
So in doing research for the next book, The Grumpy Gourmet, Doral Chenoweth really credits Kent Rigsby's Cuisine Volatile for bringing kind of bread to the forefront of restaurants.
The late, great Rigsby's, right, yeah.
Yeah, and opening up the Eleni Christini Bakery. So right. I just want to put a plug in for that, say hi to Rich and friends that are there. So I would credit a lot of the great restaurant breads and that bread making to Kent and the Eleni Christini Bakery.
I had already written that down.
Yeah,
bittersweet that they're not here.
Yeah, thank you, Doug.
You're welcome.
And good
Thanks,
luck with
Doug.
The book. Yeah. Yeah, a not here anymore restaurant, but certainly an influential one. Mm-hmm.
And I was also thinking about the sticky buns at the University Club and other restaurants. That
my sister used to bake those at the University Club.
There you go. Yeah. That's there's a small world
sister
thing.
Sister Betsy.
But,
I was trying to think of a place. It used to be in the Short North, or right around, right by Vine and Neal. And it had a great sort of peppery bread. This was years ago, though. It's 100 years
is
ago.
Is it in the historic restaurants list that's on the website?
Mm-mm.
I was thinking of the highlight rolls.
Oh, yeah.
Breads and
oh, yeah.
The Rush's Bakery breads.
Highlight is in J-A-I-L-A. Yeah, right. Another long
gone. Got to find some breads and currently. Well, a lot of restaurants use bacon serve rolls and
sure.
breads and things like that.
Or crackers and toasts and things
lavash.
Like that.
Lavash.
Yeah. Yeah. 614-292-8513. Listeners and Radio Land viewers online and in television land, come on. Coming up, we want to hear from you. What are your favorite places for bread in Columbus? We'll also get new restaurant recommendations from Rich Terapak and Steve Stover. So give us a call or email us at 614-292-8513 or email at allsides@wosu.org. Sarah, you talked about the baguette. In general, what do you look for in good bread? I know it depends. So let's start. You know, we've talked about the baguette already. Focaccia.
Well, with any bread, I think I look first at the color. And so many supermarket breads, when you pass the bread aisle, are kind of pale and tan and almost greenish yellow. Mm. And that's so unappealing to me. I want something as dark as this corner of the focaccia here that really helps to inform the interior flavor.
Tell us about this focaccia.
This is a summer focaccia, which I love to make, and it's topped with lemons, sliced whole lemons, Parmesan cheese, and then chives. Very simple, but
wow!
Can I have a bite?
Not
I'm just thinking about lemons. It makes so much sense. I can't wait to rip that thing apart.
It does,
but I would never. How do you even think of stuff like that? Is it something you'd eaten somewhere before?
I actually got the idea from I think Saveur magazine years ago, so
yeah.
I'll give them full credit.
Okay,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, hopefully they're catching this on Facebook Live. By the way, we are on Facebook Live if you want to check that out. Yeah.
But I also recommend reheating it just to give it that pop of flavor and
how long?
350 oven for about 12 to 15 minutes.
Okay. That long. Okay. And then
and
sometimes
it won't right back to life.
It gets crispy.
Yeah.
Too crispy sometimes.
Yeah.
But it won't overdo it.
Not in 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
the butter you use, if you use, I'm not sure you use butter on that at all, but what's your favorite butter at the grocery store, if you have one?
You know, I don't have a favorite. I don't often use butters in my bread, but I will say that the butter at Flowers and Bread is made on premise with Snowville Creamery milk and salted on top, and it's so delicious.
Oh my
so make
gosh.
Sure that you look for that.
Snowville's a real jewel.
It is.
A gem of a supplier.
And then ciabatta, what you're famous for.
Ciabatta is a very wet dough, and when I make it with my class, we make a dough that has maybe 70% hydration. That's referring to the amount of water you use. When I was making it professionally in New York, I was making it at 90%. And you can't imagine what that was like to work with. But
I
it was
can't.
Almost like a pancake batter.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And so we would have huge tubs of
this. Would you be using a scraper kind of
thing? We'd scrape the dough out into a long table. I had about 12 bakers, and we'd, by hand, pat it down to the right height, and we'd hand-cut rolls from it. So you can imagine there was no manipulation of the gluten. These rolls were so tender and light, they almost flew off the table. And for that, I had all of the best restaurants as clients in the city because no one else was stupid enough to use all of the labor that
patient,
I was using.
Patient enough.
Wow. When something's that wet, how long does it ferment or?
Well, that's a good question. It ferments more quickly.
Okay,
it's more attuned to temperatures, so you do have to keep an eye on it.
Does it change much?
In terms of
what it looks like?
The fermentation, yeah. Yes. You can see it visually. And okay. You can also feel it if you put the palm of your hand on top. You can begin to feel the air structure.
Okay. Mm. Wow.
And you mentioned it didn't disturb the gluten. Talk more about that, because I don't think a lot of people understand.
Well,
you can't overwork it.
One of the goals of the recent bread revolution is folding dough or not kneading dough. And Jim Leahy brought that to light through Mark Bittman's column in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And so by not overworking your gluten, you're keeping the strands of gluten very tender, and although I don't like this word, the mouthfeel is really luxurious. And you can tell the difference if you've had a bread that's been machine-made versus something like handmade ciabatta.
And that is the New York Times. Leahy's famous for the New York Times article and the recipe of no-knead bread, where you basically take a flour and water and a tiny bit of yeast and let it ferment 18 to 24 hours.
Yeah. If you're making it for a dinner party, you got to plan ahead.
And it's the one you make in a Le Creuset pan that's been heated in the oven for half an hour, and then you plop the dough in. And it's really –
No, it's fantastic.
It's completely
it's
different. It's really this is – we're going to get Ann over her fear of baking with processor
friends. It's really
easy.
But,
you just mix this stuff together and let it sit.
But I know you'd love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's on my list. I'm gonna break through this barrier. Lou in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Lou.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hi. My favorite bread is a bread that they sell at Whole Foods. It's called Seduction Bread, and it's full of all kinds of healthy things like grains and seeds, and I can eat it with nothing on it. It's so good. So I love it.
All right, Lou. Thanks a lot. You've heard of that?
I have heard of that from a few friends, as a matter of fact.
We're striking out on restaurant breads.
We are. But, you know, I don't know if, you know, as you and I was thinking about that and thinking about asking people that question, and I still want to know what people think about that, is you don't get bread the way you used to.
Right. It's not automatic.
It's not automatic. I think that's people's self-consciousness about carbohydrates, and
you have to pay for it sometimes.
And sometimes you have to pay for it, but some other places they bring it in, and it's fantastic and it's great. And I'm always pleasantly surprised.
Another reason is that if they bring you a bread basket and you don't eat it, they have to throw it out because of health regulations.
Right.
So there's a certain reluctance to do that.
Giuseppe's has a nice bread.
Yes, they do.
Down in Bexley, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. It comes with some olive oil for dipping and that kind of stuff. It's good.
Right. It is good. That's right. Mm-hmm. That was quite a thing for a while, the whole olive oil with herbs and that kind of thing.
Parmesan on the
and
side.
And salt.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
And salt. Yeah. Right. You know, is that where Worth Your Salt comes from, baking?
I'm sorry?
The phrase Worth Your Salt?
That's a good question. I'm going to have to look it up.
I bet you it does, just the way you said it. Logan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Logan.
Hi. Actually, this is back to your point about restaurants. Scally's in Reynoldsburg.
Okay.
It's a family-owned Italian restaurant, and the mother, the grandmother, she would just make the – I used to work there. She would make the bread every morning, and I thought it was incredible.
You're right, and I owe a review for the blog on that one. We've been a couple times in the last month or so. It's Scally's. It's really very good. It's, kind of – better Italian than you get in most places, and we're always looking for a good Italian.
And another
Italian
one is the Moretti's. They have these big, fluffy Italian – you get an individual loaf, but not like Eleni Cristini and the artisan bakers that we had in previous years. And that's an interesting point.
Okay, Logan, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Amy in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Sarah. This is your temporary neighbor when you lived in Clintonville. You've had my holla.
Oh, hi.
Holla now.
You were so sweet to leave me that note and the holla when I was sleeping.
Oh.
Working overnight.
You can testify. Okay.
And you've lived. Good. So tell me about your holla, and I guess there's only one I think that's even good in Columbus, but I haven't tried yours yet. So I want to know how.
Okay, first you have to tell us the one you think is good in Columbus.
Yep. Connie Kaplan.
Okay.
She makes it. She's got her own place on Main Street. No, I think it's on Broad.
Okay.
On the east side. Okay. My favorite.
What's the name of the place?
You stumped the judges here. Yeah. Honey Kaplan?
It's not Blocks, is it?
Honey, C-H-A-N-I, Honey Kaplan. She caters and she has her own place. I'd have to get back with you. I can't
okay.
remember.
All right. Well, Amy, So Amy wants to know how Flowers and Bread's challah is.
It's a really good challah, and I have to give Jeffrey Hamelman credit because it's his recipe that I handed off to the bakers at Flowers and Bread, and they're doing a great job making it, I think, every Friday, so it might be available today.
I'm getting hungry.
Ooh. Amy, thanks a lot. And if you can, Amy, call back with the location on that. Appreciate it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, email from Chuck. I love the pepper flake bread and the amazing butters at Tapatio.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the restaurant mm-hmm. I was trying to think of. They've
that's
moved?
It.
Where are
Hartley,
they?
Of course. No. Tapatio, unfortunately.
It was in
Vine and Park. It was at Vine and Park. That's exactly the restaurant I was thinking
of. Bruce Hildreth, the chef owner, passed away.
Yeah. That's right.
And Hartley Corson, who made those wonderful breads. And those they had a little bit of crackle and whole wheat, and they were sprinkled with pepper.
And then they
ground
had like
pepper.
A lime butter or cilantro butter. Great. I don't know what.
It was a southwestern Mexican theme. And he eventually opened a bread baking thing where Omega is in the North Market. But then I've lost track of Hartley because he made damn good bread.
That was my memory. That was my favorite bread. And I couldn't remember Tapatio, the name of the place.
But here we are. All
terrible.
The breads we're talking about, and almost all, are from the past, which, what does that say?
Well, now we have a chance to go there.
I have to say that there are two wonderful bakers here in Columbus that I admire, and Dan the Baker is one, and Andrew Semler of Lucky Cat is the other. When I first moved back to Columbus, I had Andrew's baguette, and it was a baguette to honor. So
okay.
I give him all due credit for making one of the best baguettes I've ever had, actually.
Wow.
The place, the Honey, is Honey Kaplan, and it's Catering by Honey, C-H-A-N-I.
Okay.
We're going to take another break. In the meantime, we'll get to the calls that are waiting, and we'll get back. This is All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, along with my co-host, Rich Terapak Sr. and Steve Stover. And also joining us today is author, teacher, teacher at Flowers and Bread in Clintonville, and baker Sarah Black. We've been talking about bread and baking. Now we're turning to the larger issue of eating and drinking in Central Ohio. Still want to hear your bread recommendations in Central Ohio. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Did you guys want to see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Email from Andrew. How do the issues with wheat affect your bread making process? Namely, the excessive use of herbicides on wheat, which may be the cause of gluten intolerance in many people, as well as other health issues.
So, great question. Yep. We were talking earlier about Stutzman Farms here in Millersburg, which is all organic. And in fact, the heritage grain that we get, the turkey red, is considered to be more tolerant by gluten-sensitive people because it hasn't been processed or hybridized as the new wheats have been.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Didn't know that.
Wow. Let's get to Caroline.
Great cheese in Millersburg as well, by the way.
And Powell. Hi, Caroline. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
That's okay.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was going to recommend Beehive Bakery out in Powell.
It's nice to have a place where I don't have to drive clear into Clintonville to get good bread. And they supply some bread for Local Roots, which is a real nice restaurant here in Powell.
Now, they wrote Beehive Break Company. You said Beehive Bakery.
Right, Beehive Bakery.
Okay. All right. I'm going to have a double check when people call in. It's Beehive Bakery.
I'll
okay.
have to go take my allocution lessons.
No, that's okay.
We're in Powell.
We're in Powell. Mm-hmm. South Liberty, 50 South Liberty okay. in there. Local Roots is at Powell Road and Liberty Road. And then the bakery's just down the road, down Liberty. They're from there, half a block.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Caroline.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Jeff in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Ann. So I've actually got a couple of recommendations. First of all, if you've never had the dinner rolls at the Boathouse at Confluence Park, it really takes me back to my grandmother's table. They do them in a cast iron skillet, and they slather them in butter, which is kind of a guilty indulgence. But,
oh, that's right.
Worthwhile.
They slather them in butter and then they sprinkle them with Parmesan cheese, which is just, I mean, they're great. They're melting your mouth. And then the other one for home use, I would really recommend Rish's Bakery out on the east side. Yeah. I haven't heard anybody talk about them yet.
How do you spell that?
R-I-S-C-H-S.
They used to make the rolls for one of the places that we used to go every Friday night down in German Village. I'm forgetting the name, but.
Not the Mohawk.
Roast beef. It was on Livingston Avenue.
Reeves. Well,
Reeves.
Okay.
Good one.
Again,
they made the rolls for Reeves.
An erstwhile restaurant.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I would check out, by the way,
had
check
real
out
turtle soup.
On the website, we have this historic Columbus restaurants
right.
list, which was recently updated. And it lists restaurants that have been in business for 25 years or more and also long-lost places, not unlike Doug Motz's wonderful book about lost Columbus restaurants.
Is Tapatio on that?
Oh, you bet.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Because, I mean, that's the thing is you're thinking, I'm thinking of a restaurant. I can't think of it, you know, and I'm beyond the time where the recall is pathetic. Jeff, thanks a lot for that call. 614-292-8513. An email from Molly. She asks, what is the secret for getting bread to rise consistently? I use the exact same King Arthur recipe for sandwich bread and Italian bread, and it's hit or miss how well it rises each time. I use a mixer to mix the dough, and the consistency seems just fine, and then I will place it in the oven with the light on or in a proofed microwave to rise. I just can't seem to get it to rise properly.
I would say let it rise on your counter outside of that maybe over warm environment. Mm-hmm. I think temperatures between 70 and 75 are the perfect temperatures for your dough to rise. And also, you can get a great dough or bread product by retarding your dough, letting it rise in the refrigerator. That draws out the flavor, gives it better texture. So,
that
know,
explains
another suggestion.
When people wanting you to make it the day beforehand to put it in the refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I do that, but that's
well,
it. Huh? Wow.
You know, I watch too much The Great British Baking
Show. Oh, it's a great show.
I love that show. So, and their new season's coming up.
Yeah.
But they always put it in proofers.
Well,
proofing drawers or whatever they call them.
And that may be for the show to help push the proofing a little
okay.
bit faster. I can't say for sure. And proofers are perfectly good pieces of equipment to have, especially in professional bakeries. But if you have the time, let your dough proof or ferment at a cooler temperature. I'd say 72, 73 okay. is perfect.
Mm. All right.
It's his counter.
Good to know. Let's see. I'm turning to Barbara in Clintonville now as soon as I can find you. Hi, Barbara. Oops.
You're
on.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Sorry, I have some laryngitis, but I don't know if it qualifies as a true bread, but I love the bread at Aladdin's at Easton with the tomato rosemary dipping sauce.
Pita?
Is it pita? It's thicker than pita.
Yeah, I know what you mean about Aladdin's bread. It is different.
It's not really a pita. It's flatter.
But it's puffier.
Bread, but it's puffier than pita.
Yeah. Puffier than pita.
And it is so good. I'm determined. I'm never going there and ordering a meal. I'm going to go get soup and eat some bread because I never can eat my meal.
I love it when people just are honest with themselves. it's puffier than pita. It's not. It's puffier than naan. I know what you're talking about, though, Barbara. We're going to have to check that out. Thanks for the call. Okay, I'm getting hungry now, Barbara. Let me go. Okay. Oops, I just accidentally disconnected Ed, but I'll ask his question. He wanted to know, why shouldn't you knead dough? What's the thought behind that?
You can. I don't mean to say that you shouldn't.
Okay.
I think that sometimes people took the kneading process too far, and that just begins to toughen up the gluten. Mm-hmm. And you can actually see it happen when you're kneading. Your dough contracts and it won't relax or be extensible.
Okay.
So the goal is to keep the gluten from getting too tough.
Yeah.
You need it. You need to make it strong enough to make a foundation for fermenting and proofing, but you don't want to overwork it.
You know, going back to the whole idea of olive bread and that kind of a thing, how do you add ingredients like that to bread? How does that change the equation?
Well, that's a good question. Dried fruit, nuts, olives, I normally add after the dough has rested. So you mix the dough for 3 or 4 minutes. You let it autolyse, which is a resting period. And then I add those kinds of ingredients.
Okay. And does something like olives, because they're wet, do they change anything?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So you have to just be careful of the quantity of water you put in. And you might even want to hold back a little bit of water just to visually see if your balance is right.
Okay. Let's see. Jay in Granville. Hi, Jay. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. I wanted to second an earlier caller's remark for Rigsby's great bread service and further romanticize the past a little bit, if anyone remembers Carolyn's.
Oh, yeah, very well.
Trilogy. Yeah, even Grumpy Gourmet remarked in one of his columns that her bread service was so good that she could sell it a la carte if she wanted. And further, he remarked on Refractory's bread service back when, not true so much anymore, that it was subpar, and they defended it by saying it was just a carrier for their sauces and other tastes, which, I don't buy that completely.
But they are now making bread off of them.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I say this is no longer true. This is a 20, 30-year-old comment. But the your interviewees today comment, too, about bakers show their skills on the baguette and also maybe the Italian boulet. But it's on the white bread still, you know? They're not, showing their skills as much or trying to promote more of the other healthier breads. Which is, I'm not whining because I just love the baguette and the boulet and the plain white. You can't beat it. But I'm seeing even the El Forne, California,
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jay. We only have a few more minutes left. We'll get to some calls if we can, but I do want to get to some news as well. And the Grandview Cafe reopened. I had one of the owners on a few weeks ago talking about
Brian Swanson.
Brian Swanson. He's the principal owner of Swanson's restaurant.
That's a trick question. I feel terrible. I can't remember the name. But anyways, they opened it up. You were there.
Yep. We actually braved opening night.
Yeah.
I think we were spotted because we were probably 30 years older than most of the people there. And they got us a table right away. Seat those people.
They thought you might not be able to stand that long.
Exactly. It's essentially, they haven't changed the interior that much. They've decorated a little bit more. They've got a larger patio with more furniture.
Okay.
It's a great place to see and be seen. Balboa, his other restaurant, is right next door, so there's kind of interchangeability. The menu is not that big. It's all stuff that folks like in a bar setting.
Okay.
You know, they had steak frites, which was that's what I had. It was very good. They have a Grandview Cafe burger that is huge with all the usual condiments, including smoked bacon. The fries, particularly the truffle fries, are and I'm not a fries person. They were really good.
Okay.
But it's a happening scene.
Can't get in.
They even have valet parking. I think. Yeah.
So, hey, Grandview,
the Grandview Cafe.
Cafe.
You need to have that.
Okay. Yeah. The Eatery Bar Event Space Redefined.
Yeah.
Well, Trism.
I just talked to Alexis Joseph today. It's called Trism. It's in the old Eddie George location High Street in the Gateway. But it's a completely new concept, and it's going to be very interesting. So we're going to have a report maybe as early as next month. They're going to have a soft opening later this month. But it's healthy food, sort of like Alchemy Juice Bar, but also with a healthy social life, a lot of drinks with sort of healthy mixes and things like that. But I think it's a really interesting – and it's from the Crest group.
Yeah, the Alsha Hall
and
boys.
The okay. – The Market Italian Village has been retooled, and it's very interesting. So,
And
this week is a really busy week for food. Johnson's Ice Cream opened yesterday.
I don't know how
Dublin.
I feel about that.
I know.
As a Bexley, I kind of wanted it all to ourselves.
Well, and
Hot Chicken content.
Takeover opens today
up
in Clintonville. Yep. I drove by it yesterday on my way to
Wine
Flowers
Bistro
and Bread.
Closed.
What?
Wine Bistro closed.
The one up there in Worthington
closed. What happened?
Closed.
Do we know?
I think it was a really hard location. There was a little bit of parking in the back.
I loved
and stuff
it.
Like. Well,
it
there's several
close.
Others.
There's one Vino Vino.
There's one up near your hood. Let's
That's
see.
True.
Clintonville is hopping with Ritzy's coming. Condado, Sweet Carrot may reopen up there.
That's good.
Let's see here. So they're open today. South Village Grill from the local canteen and old school folks. Opened this week in the old Easy Street place in German Village.
It looks like a lot of stuff is moving into Easton as well, which is kind of
Mikey's Late Night Slices expanding too.
Yep, they're going to be going up to where the Yankee Trader location.
Yeah, interesting.
Up. That's their second brick and mortar.
Right.
Yeah.
Jenny's is having their Strawberry Jam Festival Sunday afternoon and evening at the North Market. Yep. Brassica is announced a third location
in Bexley, Cosey.
And they haven't even opened the Arlington location, but they're opening
first things
Brassica.
First.
And with more news on Ritzy's, I actually might have tasted the ice cream for about four or five of the flavors. Uh-huh. And they really go back to the creaminess of the old days of Ritzy's. And I've never had so much
excitement about
a fast
food. Remember, you only taste the first five
kind
bites.
Kind of like custard, right? frozen custard. By the way, it's Brad DeHays was the developer we had on. So apologize to Brad DeHays for not remembering his name. I wouldn't remember a lot of things if people didn't help me out. I cannot get to the calls, but we have a recommendation for Vincenzo's.
Mm-hmm.
We have a recommendation for the pretzel bread at Hyde Park.
Okay.
We
Another
have a recommendation
one.
For Le Chatelaine's bread and baguettes.
Yep. Thank you, listeners.
So, all good ideas.
Go.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Sorry, I can't get to your calls. Sarah Black, any parting thoughts about bread making? Well, you have the classes coming up.
Classes,
I want to remind people about that. Yeah.
The classes will be posted June 9th, a week from today. A lot of introductory classes that progress. We'll be doing a class on buckwheat donuts and...
It's donut day, by the way.
I
mentioned that because
donut
it's National Donut Day.
I know, yeah.
But using local grains, which I think is a very important direction a lot of bakers are taking.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Sarah Black, for joining us. I really appreciate
thank
your time
you.
Today. Sarah Black, she's a teacher, baker, and author. Her book is called Flowers and Bread. And I'm sorry, she's baker at Flowers and Bread. And she's author of the book One Dough, 10 Breads, Making Great Bread by Hand. Rich Terapak Sr., thanks as always.
Thanks, Ann.
And Steve Stover, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
And that's it today for All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.